The Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Douglas presiding.
Please be seated. This first matter this morning, we have consolidated cases 56928 and 57079, James Williams and Heidi Williams et al., the 8th Judicial District, Kathleen Delaney and Baxter Health Corps et al., and 8th Judicial District, Honorable Timothy Williams. Justice Perigary and Justice Pickering have conflicts in this matter. They are not here this morning because of that. We understand that the parties have been given additional time and that they've worked out how they're going to argue these combined cases this day. We would ask that as you appear, that you please state your name and how you intend to argue this matter for us this morning. I would presume the parties representing the Williams are going to start this day.
Good morning, Chief Justice Douglas, members of the court. My name is Robert Eglett, and along with my co-counsel, Mr. Kemp, we represent the plaintiffs below, and I would ask to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal in this matter. No appellate court in the U.S., state or federal, has ever permitted a nurse to give expert testimony regarding injury causation in any case even remotely similar to this. The overwhelming majority of jurisdictions employ a bright-line test that nurses are not permitted to give causation of injury expert opinions. The small number of jurisdictions who have permitted a nurse to give expert causation of injury opinions have done so in two very limited circumstances. A handful of courts, state courts, have allowed a sexual assault nurse examiner to testify regarding her expert opinion that a victim had been sexually assaulted. And a handful of state courts have allowed a nurse to testify to the very limited situation of causation of bed sores. Each of these courts were very careful to state that the nurses could only testify to causation in this very limited medical issue, but not on other medical causation issues. The defendants are asking this court to stand alone as the only court in America to permit a nurse to provide expert testimony on injury causation that does not involve bed sores or sexual assault. Morsicato and years of Nevada case law require a physician to establish medical injury causation. The manner in which an infectious disease got transmitted into someone's bloodstream during a medical procedure is not something a nurse is qualified to determine. Nevada revised statutes define the practice of nursing and specifically exclude acts of medical diagnosis. In the two states that Mr. Hambrick is licensed, Texas and Alabama, their statutes mirror this. Mr. Hambrick admitted in his deposition that he is not permitted to diagnose injury, nor is he permitted to reach opinions regarding causation of his patients. And Mr. Hambrick has admitted that he has never previously testified as an expert in a case that a patient got an infectious disease from a dirty scope. While nurses are allowed to testify and establish a nursing standard of care, nurses cannot offer medical causation opinions. Teva's reliance on Staccato versus Valley Hospital is completely misplaced. Staccato addressed the question of whether a doctor could establish a nursing standard of care. Staccato has nothing to do with causation. Just because Mr. Hambrick has been cleaning feces off medical instruments for 15 years does not make him a physician competent to opine regarding the mechanism of disease transmission in this case.
Mr. Eglin, if the Hamburg camp testifies to causation, what could he testify to? If you were sitting on the bench and it was presented to you, what ruling would you make as to what this person could testify to?
Well, under the circumstances.
In this particular case, knowing what you know about him.
In this particular case, because no one, Mr. Hamburg and the medical doctors, through their supplemental reports that they filed late after we had filed our motion to strike Mr. Hamburg, simply adopted his opinion regarding causation. They didn't do any analysis themselves. So there's no opinion, there's no expert opinion that follows Hallmark and the analysis under the reliability section of Hallmark to link this up, other than Hamburg, who's not qualified. So I would not, in this situation, let him testify to anything, because all he'd be doing is giving this list of horribles to the jury that might have been a causation factor when there's nobody to say reliably that this is what caused the situation. I don't doubt that he is qualified to testify about the proper cleaning of these instruments, but there's no one to properly link that as a causative factor in this case, and all it's going to do is confuse the jury, and it should not be allowed, period.
Mr. Eglin, if his testimony was properly limited in the manner that you've just described, there would be no reason to exclude this individual from testifying at trial.
No, there would be. There would be Justice Sadis, because you can't have somebody come in and give the jury all these things that allegedly were problems with this clinic if there's nobody to link the causation of these problems to the hepatitis C, because it's irrelevant. It doesn't make any difference. It's like a back injury case where somebody comes in and said, well, 15 years ago, the plaintiff complained of some low back injuries and went to the chiropractor twice, and then the condition was resolved. Well, that's not relevant to a back injury 15 years later when there's no witness to link the causation, and the same applies here. So even if Hamburg were allowed to offer causation opinions as a nurse, he does not satisfy the standards in Morsicato. He has no clue what instruments were in the operating room. He cannot identify which alleged contaminated medical instruments carried hepatitis C from a source patient to a cleaning solution and then supposedly carried hepatitis from the dirty scope cleaning solution to a new scope. And he cannot state with even a 10% probability his opinion regarding this alternative theory of causation. In fact, he testified in his deposition that he has no idea how Mr. Williams got hepatitis C at all. I have no idea where Williams got his hepatitis C. That's his testimony from his deposition. Morsicato addressed medical causation and remains the law regarding the legal standard that defense medical experts must satisfy to establish an alternative causation. Mr. Hamburg confessed in his deposition that the medical probability opinions he states that he can't even state them to a 10% chance that either of these theories was the cause of the hepatitis C in plaintiff's cases. And Morsicato made it abundantly clear that medical probability opinions must be based upon more than 50% certainty, not 10%. Cases throughout the country comply and support this same standard. Besides the fact that Mr. Hamburg is not qualified to express causation testimony, he cannot even state his opinions with at least a 50% certainty. So he fails on both fronts. He's not qualified, and he can't even state it to the right standard.
Mr. Eglin, in looking at the deposition, there seems to be some confusion, or at least in my mind, about what Hamburg's opinion was offered for. When I look at his report, he seems to be saying, I clean these instruments. If you don't clean these instruments, they're dirty and they are a mode of disease transmission. It's in the deposition, when questions are posed, that there seems to be a conflation between the term mode of disease transmission and causation.
Well,
I mean, this is a nurse who seems to be eminently qualified, as you acknowledge, in cleaning equipment, and he's essentially saying, in the report at least, if you don't clean them, the consequence is it can be disease transmission. I'm almost thinking that's common sense.
And that's where he goes too far. That's
how
where
so?
He's not qualified to testify that whether it's a dirty scope or not can cause a subsequent patient to get hepatitis C. He's not qualified to give that opinion.
Well, his report doesn't say that. His report says it's a means of disease transmission. He doesn't say it will transmit hep C. He doesn't say it will transmit.
And, Your Honor, that's where you get into the speculation. He wants to throw this in front of the jury with no causation, without a proper foundation for causation.
Isn't his report simply a setup for the Cohen and Broom opinions?
Well, the problem with Cohen and Broom, Your Honor, is that they base their entire supplemental opinions on Hambrick's opinion, who's not qualified. So under a hallmark, they don't qualify under the reliability factor, because their entire opinion is based on what Hambrick. Remember, Cohen and Bloom in this case have stated four different causation opinions since this case started. Prior to Channon, in their reports and their depositions, they testified that it was the propofol, the multi-dosing of propofol, that caused the hepatitis C transmission, and that the scope issue was not scope processing was not the cause. Then after the verdict in Channon, they changed their opinions. And then they come back and say, well, there's six different potential causes. We nor anybody else can say what the actual cause is. And then after we file the motion to strike Hambrick, then suddenly there's these supplemental reports that come from them saying now they're adopting Hambrick's opinion without any independent analysis at all. You can't backdoor an unqualified expert's opinion by simply having somebody who happens to be a medical doctor say, me too, when there hasn't been that analysis, and that's the problem here. Hambrick, Bloom, and Cohen's opinions should all be excluded. Neither of the judges
addressed Bloom. So that's not in front of us.
We didn't get there.
That's not in front of us.
It's not in front of you, Your Honor. Okay. And in fact, Judge Williams didn't get to even Cohen before the case was stayed. He simply excluded Hambrick and his theory.
Mr. Eglin, it may not be legally relevant, but a question that I have is, who then would be the appropriate expert to testify to what Mr. Hambrick has testified to, if anyone?
Well, I don't think anybody can just say me too to what Hambrick says.
I understand
he's
that.
Not qualified to that. So I don't think anybody at this point is appropriate. You know, if there's a separate expert who is a physician who is qualified to give these type of testimony, these type of opinions, that's fine. But that's not the case here. That's not the situation here.
Mr. Eglin, there's another kind of thread that runs through this, and whether or not what's being offered is rebuttal. How do we deal with that in this expert situation? Because unlike our experts who are starting with a proposition, these experts seem to be attacking a proposition and saying, as you talked about, those experts' opinion could not be within that 50% realm.
Well, Morsicato says, Your Honor, Morsicato says that even defense experts who are offering alternative causation theories must state their opinion to a reasonable degree of medical probability. Now, the defense has tried to claim that Morsicato is limited to medical malpractice cases, and that is just not the case. Under Morsicato, defense experts of any kind in a tort case regarding alternative cause must be to a reasonable degree of medical probability. Morsicato heavily relied on United Exposition Services
the SIS, a Nevada Supreme Court work comp case, which stated physicians must state to a reasonable degree of medical probability that the condition in question was caused by the industrial injury. This wasn't a medical malpractice case. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court case heavily relied upon in Morsicato was a motor vehicle accident case, not a medical malpractice case, Your Honors. I see that my initial time is up. Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice Douglas. May it please the court. Dan Pulsenberg for the defendants. There seem to be two issues of primary concern here. One is whether a nurse can testify and as to what. And what does Morsicato do in a defendant's case? Let me start with what a nurse can testify to. Here we have two rulings from two incredibly talented district judges. Judge Delaney reviewed everything that Mr. Hambrick was going to say, reviewed his background, reviewed the circumstances of the case, and said that he can testify. Please note also, she said that Dr. Cohen and Dr. Bloom could testify, and they challenged that. So Dr. Cohen and Dr. Bloom are in front of this court. Judge Williams, however, said, you know, Mr. Hambrick is a nurse, and a nurse is not a doctor. Nurses can't play doctor. And if nurses could testify, Judge Williams says, I would have saved a lot of money when I was a practitioner, and I could have hired nurses. Now, is it appropriate to exclude a nurse simply because he is a nurse? No. Nevada does not follow any rigid, factor-oriented analysis for determining what expert proof is. Nevada has repeatedly rejected Daubert, the federal standard, for exactly that reason, because it is too rigid an analysis. And in the Chaz Higgs case, just last January, a year ago, this court said that the problem with the federal standard, and to a degree what's misleading about Hallmark, is it focuses too much on factors. If you look only at licensure or formal education, then you would say, well, Mr. Hambrick is only a nurse.
Mr. Pulsenberg, why should we let a nurse testify as to causation?
And that's a good question. And there are a number of ways to analyze this. I think that we can say that Mr. Hambrick, even if a nurse is limited in testifying, can get 95% of the way there to making the entire case. Mr. Hambrick can testify what the proper standards are in the processing room, the reprocessing room, that they fail to follow those standards, that the reason we have the standards is to keep there from being the transmission of bioorganisms from one patient to another. And I think he can go the one step further also and say, yes, because of that. Justice Hardesty pointed out that in his report, what Mr. Hambrick says is that the failure to follow these cleaning and high-level disinfectant procedures, the appropriate procedures, that would be a viable mode of transmission for any number of patients, including the patients that we have here. I certainly think he can go that far. And then Dr. Cohen and Dr. Bloom can say yes, and they do say that, that this was the cause, that the failure to follow the ordinary high-level cleaning and disinfectant procedures, that's the reason why the hepatitis C was transmitted to these.
You seem to be agreeing with Mr. Eglett to a point, but as to a divergence, he's offering that Bloom and Cohen are just kind of saying me too to Hambrick's position.
If Mr. Hambrick is allowed to testify that this was the cause, and I think he is, but let me skip to my fallback position. What they seem to be saying is you have to have an MD to be able to say cause. And here I have two MDs, a gastroenterologist and a neuroanesthesiologist, who are saying yes, this was the cause. The dirty cleaning practices at the clinics, that was the cause of the transmission of hepatitis C. I don't see where there can be anything wrong with that. Remember I said Mr. Hambrick gets us 95% of the way there. I think he can get us the other 5 as well. He knows why we do the cleaning. He knows that if we don't do the appropriate cleaning, that we have the spread of disease. Here we have the spread of disease, As Justice Hardesty says, it's almost common sense.
So in other words, Mr. Polsenberg, you're suggesting a common sense approach to determination of expert qualifications based upon their area of expertise, meaning there are certain things that a nurse necessarily knows that a doctor doesn't, simply because of the difference in their assignments, if you will, in the surgical suite.
I think that's part of it, but I don't want to corral myself into a rigid, factor-oriented approach. I think here, certainly, Mr. Hambrook is, and it's never been challenged, that he is one of the leading experts in the country on the reprocessing of scopes. And if Dr. Cohen and Dr. Bloom rely on that to say that the cleaning procedures here were egregious, then that is an appropriate reliance of one expert on somebody who's competent in that area. And then the doctor can, if what they are arguing, and I don't see it being anything else, if what they are arguing is that a doctor has the last causation connection, I've got two doctors who say that. But I think it's even more that Mr. Hambrick can say that as well. For a number of reasons, yes, Morsicato is a malpractice case. That actually was a pharmaceutical malpractice case. Morsicato says that you need expert opinion in malpractice cases, and it makes that determination relying on Brown versus Capanna, which was a medical malpractice case, which relies on NRS 41A.100, which is the medical malpractice statute that says here's what you need to prove in a medical malpractice case. Now, Mr. Eglet says that this court of Morsicato relied on United Exhibition Services. It did, but he left out half of what this court said in that case. In United Exhibition Services, this court said you can prove causation through an expert who will give an expert opinion or through facts that show causation. Outside the medical malpractice area, you can have the facts. Your Honor, you could have a situation that was almost common sense. I think that Mr. Hambrook can go this far, and the jury could go rest of the way and say, with such dirty cleaning procedures, it's obvious that there's causation. Now, that might be a problem. Mr. Hambrook does go the rest of the way, and Dr. Cohen goes the rest of the way, and Dr. Bloom goes the rest of the way. But but it is true that there's a difference here between the mode of transmission and medical causation. We're not talking about the medical cause. We've discussed this in the briefs. But, you know, my ultimate position is, as important an issue as this is that even if Mr. Hambrick couldn't testify to this, Dr. Bloom and Dr. Cohen can testify to this. So we're really in a position where I do not see the problem. The real problem that I see is that Judge Williams used a very rigid, factor-oriented approach. And Judge Delaney looked at all the circumstances under the case. This court in Staccato said that unlike other states, and it expressly mentioned Illinois, we don't look at licensure. We look at whether the expert witness has the special knowledge, the skill, training, education to be able to assist the jury. And here, Mr. Hambrick has that. And that's not disputed. The only thing that is disputed is whether he can testify because he's a nurse. Let me get to...
Well, I'm not so sure that's accurate. I mean, I understand the ruling of the court, but I come back to what exactly Hambrick's opinion is. Hambrick's report says that if you don't clean this equipment, it invokes a viable mode of disease transmission.
Yes.
Without even specifying what disease would be transmitted. Is the defense intending to offer Hambrick as an expert that failure to sterilize this equipment transmits Hep C to these two plaintiffs?
Yes, to these four plaintiffs.
To these four plaintiffs. And do they also offer Hambrick's testimony to say that the lack of sterilization in these procedures caused Hep C to these four plaintiffs?
Yes, and he testified to that, that this was the mode of transmission, that this is the reason why they caught hepatitis C. It would be a mode of transmission for hepatitis B, hepatitis C, or HIV. And in this case, it happened to be hepatitis C. And he can testify to all of that. And if the court says that that is too far for a nurse to walk, I've got Dr. Cohen and Dr. Bloom.
Where in the record are the qualifications of Mr. Hambrick to testify that the lack of sterilization in this clinic caused Hep C in these four patients?
Well, it's because he is acknowledged as an expert. Although I imagine it is subject to cross-examination, he's an expert on the proper high-level cleaning and disinfectant procedures that are necessary to kill microorganisms. And he knows that if you don't do that, you will spread disease from patient to patient. And that if these patients, now Mr. Eglett said at one point, Mr. Hambrick says, I don't know how they got it. It's true. These patients could have, in individual cases, contacted hepatitis C outside the clinics. But if they contacted it, if it was transmitted to them at the clinics, Dr. Cohen and Dr. Bloom all testify that the inadequate reprocessing is the cause. Let me jump over to the Morsicato issue.
Well, actually, Dr. Cohen's initial opinion is, to a reasonable degree of medical probability, that no one can determine with any degree of certainty which of these routine breaches of infection control could have led to the transmission of Hep C. And that was an opinion that was expressed in the context of the vials, as well as an opinion that contemplated, to a degree, the lack of sterilization.
And I think that is a perfect transition into Morsicato. But before we go there,
the legal question I'd like you to address is this.
Yes.
Does a defense expert in a products liability case have to testify when offering alternative theories to a reasonable degree of medical certainty or probability as to each of those theories?
Not in the context that you're presenting it. And let me explain what I mean.
Well, I may be wrong, but that's how I view the legal question in this case.
And I agree, and I think that's the Morsicato issue. And there are only two cases that plaintiffs cite to say that a defendant has to show that an alternative cause is more likely than not. One is Morsicato, and Morsicato doesn't say that. What Morsicato says is that an expert opinion, even a defense expert opinion, has to be stated to a reasonable degree of probability. And that is not that a certain situation is more likely than not. It's the expression of the level of confidence that the expert has in the opinion that he or she is given. Look at the opinions that were presented in the Wyeth versus Rowat case. First, we had experts who said, no one knows what causes breast cancer. And that was stated to a reasonable degree of medical probability, just as Dr. Cohen's original opinions. Now, remember, his opinions evolved as the factual issues evolved. This is a situation where we didn't know all the facts originally. On March 18th, it was discovered that in the Channon case, the nurse anesthetist, Ms. Glass Serrano, said that she didn't double dip or reuse vials. And that's when Dr. Cohen came in, even in the Channon case, to say, well, that could not have been a cause. Now, Judge Walsh excluded that because it was untimely, but we're in a situation here where we didn't know all the facts to this point now because of the clinic's failure to keep adequate records. And to mislead investigations, we did not know in the beginning, and we are determining as these litigations go on what actually took place. But to get back to your legal point, that I raised to address the side comment that these opinions are untimely, and to address your question about Dr. Cohen's original opinions. The other case that they cite is a case from Ohio called Stinson versus England. And in Stinson versus England, Justice A. William Sweeney says there are three ways for a defendant to attack the plaintiff's case, where the plaintiff has, and that happens to be a medical malpractice case, but even there, three ways for a defendant to attack when the plaintiff has the burden of persuasion. Certainly we know that the plaintiff has to show what a cause is, and that it has to be more likely than not. But a defendant can do it one of three ways. Cross-examination. You can cross-examine their experts and say, what about these alternative causes? You can do it by attacking their expert opinion as to what the cause is, or you can show an alternative cause. Now be careful. Those last two are very similar, because what the Stinson court was, when an expert, a defense expert, comes up and says, where there are three possible alternatives, and out of the three, that this one, other than the one the plaintiff says, is more likely than the other two. While that doesn't say that it is more likely than not, it comes in to challenge that the plaintiff's theory is not more likely than not. The Wilder case, the First Circuit said, you could have 100 experts, and 99 of them will say there are four alternatives, and any one of them is equally as applicable as the next. But you have one expert who says, no, it is cause A. Now, if we were to say that we exclude the 99 experts, the generally scientifically accepted theories, because they cannot say what the alternative is, more likely than not, it would turn the idea of the burden of persuasion on its head. So in this circumstance, we should do three things. We should cross-examine their experts. Remember, doctors diagnose by ruling out causes. Doctor, how do you rule out that it's the reprocessing room? We could come in and say, look, it could be any number. In Wyeth, they presented any number of risk factors.
Is Judge Stinson's analysis altered because it's a products liability case and the burden of proof in that kind of dispute?
No, because I think that we are allowed to attack their prima facie case in these ways under Clark County School District versus Richardson. I see I have just under 3 minutes left, if I may save that time for Sir Rebuttal.
Thank you,
Mr. Chief Justice.
Morsicato is the law in Nevada, and Morsicato makes clear that even a defense expert who is trying to state an alternative theory of causation must state that to a reasonable degree of medical probability. A reasonable degree of medical probability is defined in Nevada and virtually every jurisdiction in this country as more likely than not, more than 50%. They don't meet that here. And in fact, Dr. Cohen, in his deposition, states, I think you already said this, you are not saying to a reasonable degree of medical probability that Williams Allen Rigidor got hepatitis C at the clinic from the dirty scope or from the cleaning agent causing another scope to get dirty. Am I correct? Answer, I am not saying that. Dr. Cohen, and as we sit here today, you can't tell to a reasonable degree of medical probability which of the breaches correct. That's correct. So you can't say it was a dirty scope or a dirty cleansing agent as opposed to propofol multi-dosing. Answer, I cannot say which breach was responsible, if a breach, if they got exposed on that day. Dr. Bloom does not reach this as well. He testified he couldn't give an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical probability. So neither of these so-called witnesses that they wanted used to bootstrap in Hambrick's opinion can say it to a reasonable degree of medical probability as well. They don't say that. Hambrick testified it was a possibility, but he couldn't even state that it was a 10% probability. And so,
what about the First Circuit's analysis in Wilder? Why can't Dr. Cohen offer alternative theories for the transmission of Hep C to your clients?
That's exactly what this court said in Morsicato was improper. Then it just simply allows the defense to throw up a multitude of horribles, all potential causes, and to get the jury to speculate about what occurred. This court said, and has said since 1989, this court has held that a medical expert is expected to testify only on matters that conform to the reasonable degree of medical probability standard. Furthermore, this court has observed that expert testimony regarding causation must also rise to this level of certainty. As the court has recognized, one rationale for requiring such specificity with expert opinions is that if the medical expert cannot form an opinion with sufficient certainty so as to make a medical judgment, there is nothing on the record with which a jury can make a decision with sufficient certainty so as to make a legal judgment.
But in the context of a products liability case and in the context of this case, its requirement to state with a reasonable degree of medical certainty that this type of event will cause the transmission of this disease. Which of these events cause the disease is unclear, but if you have dirty scopes, it will cause Hep C. If you have contaminated propofol vials, it will cause the disease. But isn't what the court is saying in those cases that the doctor is expected to do is to say that that cause is to a reasonable degree of medical certainty without identifying a specific one?
The Morsicato case is directly on point. That's exactly what happened with the defense physician in that case. He says, I can offer theories that are, in my opinion, just as probable as the plaintiff's theory, but he couldn't state it that it was more likely than not. He couldn't state his theory was any more likely than the other theories or to a reasonable degree of medical probability. And that's why this court in Morsicato reversed that case and sent it back. That is the state of the law in Nevada. Now, Mr. Polzenberg's reliance on one sentence in Morsicato opinion to support their argument that Morsicato is limited to medical malpractice case is in error. The statement of Morsicato was in the context of the court's discussion of the Banks case, which was a medical malpractice case, and how the rule set forth in Banks that not all expert testimony must be stated to a reasonable degree of medical probability did not abrogate the rule which applied to Banks that expert medical testimony regarding standard of care and causation must be stated to a reasonable degree of medical probability. The Morsicato case is clear that the court was simply pointing out that the rule stated in Banks that not all expert testimony be stated to a reasonable degree of medical probability did not change the general rule that expert testimony regarding injury causation be stated to a reasonable degree of medical probability. In Banks, the court was simply, I think Mr. Polzenberg misspoke when he was talking about United Exposition, but in Banks, the court was talking about the testimony about the potential ways in which a piece of equipment could fail. Under those circumstances, it wasn't required that a doctor state it to a reasonable degree of medical probability. But when you're talking about injury causation, it is an entire different situation. A viable mode of transmission is not an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical probability. We're talking about possibilities. It could be this, it could be that, it could be this. That's precisely what this court in Morsicato said was improper, that experts, including defense experts, on the issue of causation must state their opinions to a reasonable degree of medical probability, more likely than not, more than 50%. That has not been met here, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morsicato doesn't say that a defense expert has to testify that something is more probable than not. Morsicato says that a defense expert, any expert, has to state things to a reasonable degree of medical or scientific probability. And those are two different things. As I said earlier, stating an opinion to a reasonable degree of probability is a level of confidence. In the quote that Mr. Eglin just gave us, it talks about a level of certainty. What we're talking about is the requisite confidence in the opinion. Not that the opinion has to be that something is more likely than not. Let's look at Morsicato and we'll see that. Remember in that case, Dr. Schneck came in and testified, there are any number of alternatives and you can't say that it is the lindane that caused the skin problems here. And Judge Earl said to him, no, doctor, you can't testify to that. You have to testify that yours is more likely than not. And Dr. Schneck says, well, I can testify that out of the alternatives that an autoimmune response is more likely than the other alternatives. And Judge Earl said to him, no, you have to say that it is more likely than not. And Dr. Schneck said, well, I'll go out on a limb and I'll say that the autoimmune response is more likely than not. And this court, in its opinion, said, although Dr. Schneck ultimately testified that it was more likely than not an autoimmune response, he didn't express that opinion to a reasonable degree of medical probability. They're the two different things. It's not what the opinion is. It's the degree of confidence that the expert has in the opinion. Now, tell you the truth, I thought we were going to lose the Morsicato trial, and I thought the issue on that appeal was going to be whether Judge Earl was right in telling an expert, a defense expert, he had to say that an alternative cause was more likely than not. Well, that didn't turn out to be the issue. This court said that the reason Dr. Schneck couldn't testify is because he didn't express the requisite confidence. I petitioned for rehearing, and I said, you know, somebody could misread this opinion as saying that a defense expert has to say that an alternative cause is more likely than not. And the panel said that there is nothing in that opinion that leads to that conclusion. Banks. I didn't mean Banks when I said United Exposition Services. I meant United Exposition Services. But from Banks and Morsicato, we can see that there are cases when you don't have to testify to a reasonable degree of probability. And this case is one of them, because we're looking for the truth. We are looking in a case where the evidence is not coming out slowly, shall I be polite in saying. And it's not fair to give the jury only half of the picture. Because if we do that, we are actually giving them a falsehood. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
The court would thank counsel on both sides for the argument this day. It was enlightening, educational, and it helps us to get to the matter at hand. With that, this matter will stand submitted.